yesterday you were saying about silence and listening to the the mind chattering, and then also if it's possible to distinguish between thoughts that arise and fall and thoughts that I think. It seems to me, just from one day's very partial silence, that they all just come and all thoughts seem to just rise up and fall down, but then sometimes something jumps up and grabs onto one, and then that's the one that I think.
Yes.
Whereas if that didn't happen, they would all just rise up and fall down.
Yeah. Drift away. The question is, do thoughts prevail and continue to be if I don't think? Even if you don't think any thoughts at all, thoughts continue to rise and fall. Just as, for instance, in dream, you are not dreaming voluntarily. Dreams float in and float out. Come and go, come and go, come and go. In the same way, is it possible for us not to think? That is, I don't want to think about anything. There is a sensory stimulus. Something is making some noise. And it is possible for the mind to associate that noise with something else and keep drifting along. Psychologists call it free association. Yes? Just free, it keeps floating, 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 floating. You are not holding on to any thought whatsoever. With the result that no thought has any effect upon you. We don't know. I'm not dogmatic here. We don't know whether it is the ego that thinks it, or the superego that thinks it, or the id that thinks all those thoughts. We don't know. But this much is clear. As long as I don't hold on to that one thought, any one of those thoughts, they arise and they float and they fall. Arise and they float and they fall. Arise and they float and they fall. Without really leaving an impression. Very much like when you walk along the shopping center, you might see 1,000 faces. You don't remember one of them. Except when it happens to be your friend. That is the one the ego grabs and registers. So, only those thoughts that are registered by whatever it is, by the ego or mind, we don't know, all the rest is speculation, is held. Now, put it the other way around. Why does the mind hold that thought? That is what it thinks. That is the thought that the mind thinks, I think. The rest of those thoughts just arise and fall. No object, no problem at all.
And so when all that's happening, it's like there's something else that's watching it all.
Something else is watching, sure.
It
could be another thought. If it says, I am watching, and it is possible, which happens in meditation, for observation to be without an observer, without the feeling, I am watching. If there is the feeling, I am watching, that's also another thought. Even if that feeling, even that feeling is not there, then there is just simple and pure awareness which doesn't get involved at all. Because if there is the awareness, I am watching, which means I am thinking I am watching. Again, there is a division in this, in the mind. Or the attention is divided between the feeling or the sense I am watching and the object or the thought being watched. The attention is divided. Not clear? If there is this feeling I am watching, or if there is a thought I am watching, which means there is an observer created out of the same mind stuff. Out of the same mind stuff, an observer is created. If that, when that happens, the attention is divided between the two. The attention remains upon this observer, maintaining its status as an observer. I am observing. And then the other thought that is being observed. And so the observation is weak. Whereas if that is not there, there is simple, pure awareness which is aware of the thoughts floating in and out. It doesn't hang on to any thought, it doesn't suppress any thought, it doesn't evaluate any thought as good, evil, nice, not so nice. When you are really and literally experiencing a dream state, even though you are awake. Correct? That is what they call daydreaming, which is a nice thing, except that it happens involuntarily. And except that there is really not that observation. In daydreaming, everything is fluid. But here, there is observation. In daydreaming, there is no real observation. It's nothing. But here, you are dreaming. But it's only half the truth. The dreams come floating in and out, the daydream come floating in and out, but there is something which is observing, not the observer, but an awareness that is observing this whole show. An observation that is observing the whole show, without an observer.
That seems to happen for a while, and then the observer comes up. Then there must be something behind all this.
We don't know about that. Why worry about behind the wall? First, become aware of what is in front of you here. Then we can discuss what is behind the wall.
Correct.
Come on, let's go. Come on, let's go.
Swamiji, in what state is our mind when our thoughts are perfectly still, when the activity of our mind is still, ceases?
In what state does the activity of the mind cease? Does it have to cease at all? They call it sattva. They call it sattva. That is, in the case of an enlightened person, when he is not actively engaged in something, either physically or mentally, his mind is at rest, complete rest. No, sir. No, sir. Wait a moment. The tamasic state being sleep.
Right. Asking, the self is in that state, the self doesn't know itself. The self is covered by ignorance.
The self is covered by ignorance.
This is a tamasic state.
When the self is covered by ignorance, it is a tamasic state. But when that tamasic state is removed, when the tamas is removed, when this ignorance is removed, when this inertia is removed, then the mind comes to its own natural state, which is bubbling. Bubbling, rajasic state, dynamic, active, disturbed, restless. And the yogi, by investigating the truth concerning the mind, understands the mind to be restlessness, just as the wind is restless, the mind is also restless, the mind is restlessness. And suddenly he realizes restlessness is restless only in relation to something else. But what is the content of this restlessness? What is the content of mind? The content of mind being being.
Yeah, if you look at it this way, yes, but because by looking at it this way, you've already polarized the mind by introspecting the thought.
Correct.
So therefore you're polarized, you're getting into a set of collisions when that mind has been cleared or
right.
Realizing the understanding that you have understood that thought.
Exactly. So, when there is cloud movement, the sky is overcast. You look through that cloud, become aware of what is the background of this cloud? Where does it hang? You will appreciate it even more clearly if we get back to our famous shadow on the wall. The shadow is tamas. And I want to see it clearly and to know directly what is the substance of the shadow. not substance which the shadow represents. What is the substance of the shadow? Then, when I illumine that shadow, the shadow becomes enlightened. When the shadow is enlightened, the substance on which or in which or whatever it is, the shadow was seen, is revealed. In the same way, first there is tamas, there is dullness, there is ignorance of the content of the mind, ignorance of the reality which appears to be a thought. Thought is an appearance, yes? Thought has got a form, a shape. You are thinking about something. Right. Now, bless you. What is the reality of that thought? When you thus throw some light on the shadow that appears in you as a thought, then you realize it's shifting character. It comes and goes, it comes and goes, it comes and goes, yes? It comes and goes, it comes and goes, and comes and goes. Aha. Though it comes and goes, now this, now that, now this, now that, now this, now that. This is the mind. Mind means restlessness, unsteady. Keeps going, keeps going, keeps going. What keeps going where? What keeps going where? Now, when there is intense observation, the light of that observation reveals a very simple truth. What is it? That's all. That is called sattva. At that point, whether the mind is still thinking or not, you have stilled it in a certain way, in a very beautiful way. This has to be experienced. That is, you look very close at the ocean, it seems to be restless, full of waves. And as long as you are isolating the waves and looking at them, there seems to be a terrific lot of motion and commotion. You are not looking at the waves, you are not looking at the streams and the currents, you are looking at water. And the water is water. It's just water. That's it. That state is called sattva. Now, let's come back to our friend's question. When the yogi is engaged in some sort of activity, physical or mental, his mind also is active. If the mind is not active, you won't be able to function, right? Obvious, simple. But unlike us ordinary people, whose minds are agitated all the time, when the necessary activity has come to an end, the mind rests in peace, in the case of the yogi. And that state of rest is called sattva.
That doesn't mean that there's no thoughts.
At that point, there is no thought. He doesn't have He has no thought to think.
They don't keep coming up
and down. They don't keep coming up and down. What it is, there is no need for them.
In what state is the mind when that mind is like a mirror? What state are you in when, you know, the self reflects?
Yes, that is.
From
right, correct.
What sort of state is it?
That is one of the stages before enlightenment. Correct. Understand. That is a stage towards enlightenment. When the mind is pure, and in the enlightened man, again, there are these two stages, or three. One is the sattva stage, when he is not interested in thinking anything. His mind is at rest. Then there are two states which are familiar to all of us. One, when you are listening, or when you are looking, when you are observing, when you are sitting and watching. The other, when you are initiating an action. Correct? So, when the yogi or the enlightened person observes something passively, everything is reflected in his consciousness. Everything is reflected in his mind without distortion. That's the idea. The idea of that sutra in the Patanjali's Yoga Sutras is that in the case of the enlightened man or the yogi, when he listens to something, when he sees something, when his senses report to his mind, the things that they observe, there is no distortion. Everything is correctly portrayed by his intelligence or the mind. That is when he is passive. When he is initiating an action, of course the mind is restless and it works, functions. So we have these three states, if you have followed these correctly. One, when he is not interested in anything that he is looking at or watching. He is not looking at anything. Then the mind is at perfect rest, and that is a state of sattva, where there are no thoughts at all. It is tantamount to our sleep, though he is not sleeping. It's very much like correct. That is where you and I would be fast asleep. He is not sleeping. He is awake, but not thinking. The mind is completely at rest without any movement in it. Then there are two others. When he is awake, there are two states. One, in which he is passive, he is listening to you, or he is listening to a concert, or he is watching a show, then, or he is observing what we are doing here, then his own mind is passive, that is, it is not reacting, it is not responding to what it sees. It reflects everything absolutely perfectly, as things are. Without our defect of categorizing everything, linking everything with something else, this is not as good as that, that's not as good as this. Everything is reflected as in a mirror. As in a spatika, crystal. Absolutely as these things are. Then the other state is when he responds to them, to whatever situation he is in, so that the mind takes on just a little agitation, just a little movement in order to think, in order to participate in events.
Why is it then that our minds are always thinking? And
that's it. That's because we have not trained ourselves to
just that.
In that state in which every attitude is reflected within, is there any remembrance of that state?
If he wants to.
Whatever you see.
Sure. Since the mind has responded to that, there can be remembrance. As yes.
In a specific state, because he is not total awareness.
Sure, there is total awareness, sir. There is total awareness, except that he doesn't keep on reacting as we do. And he doesn't. I was telling her, probably you didn't hear. That is, when he sits and observes or listens to a concert, that music is reflected in his consciousness as in a crystal, absolutely as it is, without being distorted by subjective evaluation or comparison. For instance, if you and I, not you, me, perhaps some of these, some others, when we listen to some concert, only part of the mind listens to the concert. Part of the mind is busy comparing it or judging it. It's beautiful, it's not so beautiful. So, the music is not reflected purely, simply. And this may also lead to loss of clarity in perception and later in remembrance. Whereas in the case of the yogi, he doesn't do that. If he is listening to the concert, he is listening to the concert. All attention there. There is nothing else, no other distraction. No distraction at all. And so his consciousness, his mind, chitta, is able to reflect it absolutely correctly. He is like a steady mirror. And he can, if he wants to, remember it. Because he is aware, the awareness responds to it. By being there, by responding to it. There is no internal dialogue. He doesn't carry on an internal dialogue as he is listening to the music. So, but when he wants to, he can. Then that is the third stage, where the mind is active and therefore there is some restlessness. A little bit of movement of thought in that mind.
Does the enlightened man have a preference? I mean, if it was really good to be absolutely quiet.
On the third, does an enlightened man have any preference at all? At the third stage that we have been discussing so far, he can have preferences.
Now, what I mean is, if an enlightened man has the ability to remain in any one of those three states, then you're lucky to get him to become active at all, wouldn't you just prefer to?
Why not? No. Then you are condemning him to one state. It's unnecessary.
What prompts the move?
What prompts the move is anything. Number one, as long as the body is alive and the mind is associated with it through what is called prarabdha. This prarabdha, the karma itself might make the move and push him here and there, number one. And number two is also called prarabdha, though it is not his own karma. It's called parecha prarabdha. Somebody else may ask him a question or make him do something. Come on, let's go and swim. And the yogi is also made to do something. There are all sorts of circumstances. As long as that yogi is alive in the ordinary sense of the word, he can also be subjected to all these movements. But he has a choice. He can withdraw himself and look blank.